Welcome to the Content That Grows podcast, where we chat with folks from all kinds of companies to better understand the content they've invested in, how they did it, and how it impacted the growth of their company. I'm Nate Turner, co-founder and CEO of TenSpeed.io. Today, I'm sitting down with Aaron Balsa. Aaron has led content teams for 7 years, first as a managing editor at a content marketing agency, and then as the head of content and marketing director at a high-growth B2B SaaS company called The Predictive Index. She's also the founder and chief picky editor at Aaron Balsa Content Marketing, where she works with B2B companies whose content needs mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Known for her bold and edgy writing style, she lives by the mantra, "Don't be boring." And she's obsessed with data-driven storytelling. She also recently launched her first course called The Research Report Playbook, which we'll discuss more today. I'm excited to learn more. Let's jump right in. Hey, Aaron, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Nate. Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. So you work for a company called Predictive Index. So I would love to just kind of start, because obviously you've had a career there, kind of growing from, you know, content marketing roles into more leadership, and have done some really interesting stuff around data reports and a number of other things. So I'd love it if you could just start, give kind of a quick overview of what Predictive Index does and kind of who your audience is.
Sure. I joined PI about a little over 3 years ago. And at the time, we were known as a behavioral assessment company. We have a very popular assessment that you can use to understand yourself, similar to DISC. A lot of people have heard of DISC, but it's also used for hiring. So you can match people to the job based on their personality. And when I started there, we were getting ready to launch a new market category, but we hadn't named it yet. We had a vision, we just had to get it down on paper. So I was fortunate to be part of that process, and I got to be part of the team that launched the category. And with that category, talent optimization, we launched our talent optimization platform to the world, which lets business leaders and HR leaders use behavioral people data to make better business decisions, how to build dream teams, how to manage your employees better. And we also have an employee engagement assessment as part of the platform.
And is that, do you kind of work across a lot of different industries, or are you a little more focused in?
We work across industries. Yeah, cool. There's a use case for most industries, from construction to tech and everything in between.
Yeah, okay, cool. And so audience is probably a lot of HR, maybe COO, operations type folks, talent teams, things like that. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have different products within the platform. So for example, Hire really does well with our HR leaders and executives, whereas Design, it's all about strategic and business strategy. So that really lands well with executives all across different functions. So we're really focusing on the top levels of the org, but as we grow, we're talking more and more to leaders at every level. Managers, individual contributors who care about being a leader in their role. Sure. So we're really broadening our scope over time.
Okay, very cool. So let's go back to when you joined. You said you got to be involved in that and kind of launching the talent optimization category. You came in like a, at least kind of looking at your LinkedIn, like came in like a content marketing role. So I'd love to just kind of go back to, you know, what was that like? You know, what kinds of content were you doing? Like how much were you in strategy versus just kind of churning out whatever kind of hit your desk, or, you know, kind of where were you at in sort of seniority and the strategy of the company?
Sure. So when I started, I had been leading content teams for 3.5 years, and I was recruited over by one of my former coworkers who was running, who was a demand gen manager at PI at the time. So he needed somebody to come and kind of grow the content team. So I was the first content person, and my first task was actually just building a content calendar. And then from there, building systems and processes to scale over time. Made my first hire after a few months and have since grown the team to 8 people. But when I first started, it was really, my focus was SEO, because we already had some decent SEO going and I just wanted to scale that. That's sort of an easy win just to get people on the site. And then from there, we had a big lead gen goal. So we started just creating some content to assist us with meeting our lead gen targets. And then we really refined our strategy over time. Because, you know, you kind of have to give the sales team what they need while you're building systems for the future. It's not something you can just drop in and start doing exactly what you want to be doing. That just takes time.
Yep. Cool. So you said, it sounds like you started primarily with blog content for SEO and then moved, like, for some of the lead gen goals, like, what types of content were you building then?
Guides
or webinars, like?
Yeah, webinars. Yeah. We do a few webinars every month. We do guides. We do quizzes and a lot of templates. Templates always did really well for us. We'd put some paid behind templates, and that worked really well for a long time.
Cool. So you built the initial content calendar, started with SEO, built, branched out into some other stuff. It sounds very smart, logical. At what point did you kind of start to take some of the like data around the performance of the early stuff to inform, like informing future planning and figuring out what would make sense for like your next roadmap and things like that? Like, at what point did you start doing that?
We always looked at data. Our data analysis has gotten a lot more sophisticated over time as we've built out that team that handles it. It's the RevOps and business intelligence team. And they have built us multi-touch attributions, so we're really able to have visibility into the entire journey now. Back then, we didn't have that. We had much less visibility. But we always looked at lead type, and we'd look at conversion rate. So we were always understanding that our content was our number one lead driver for like the first year, because people loved our content, they came back, they consumed more and more. But the problem was, you know, a lot of times we're reaching out too soon and they weren't ready, they just wanted to consume the content. So even though we were driving all these leads, it was closing pretty at a low rate. Excuse me, I have a frog in my throat today. So then we decided to gate less. So what we did was we started working to a model of strategic gating, and we built a proprietary learning center where people can log in once, give their information once, and then never have to fill out another form. And instead of just static content, which was kind of just given to them, we started doing a lot more interactive contents, which was more like a sandbox model, get your hands in, play with these different experiences. So experience the software with interactives and courses and certifications and things like that.
Yeah, very cool. That's neat. Did you, and was that built in-house like from scratch, or was it like Path Factory or some sort of like tool that sort of allowed you to create an experience like that?
Yes, we built it in WordPress, and we, built it out in WordPress using some other systems.
Got it. Okay. Some of the, like,
I did not build it, obviously.
Type plugins, yeah. Yeah. Cool. Oh, no, it's good. It's a cool concept. I haven't heard that as much. I feel like a lot of folks kind of go the route of like having a marketing automation platform that, like, you know, you're cookied and they know you're there, and then you can either do progressive profiling or just not have to fill out the forms. But yeah, it's really cool. And just sort of like thinking about the visitor and the user perspective is pretty cool. Idea to kind of like feel like you're sort of stepping in, like you called it, what do you call it, learning hub or learning center?
Yeah, we call it PI Learn.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, that's really neat. Cool. So then it makes sense, like you said, it sort of improved over time. Now you have RevOps, you have multi-touch, like that sounds right. And early on, you said you really just kind of focused on lead type. So was that in conversion rate? So it was like you're breaking down blog posts versus other formats and kind of just looking at like what's driving leads and which types, and then kind of making the best decision you can from there. Mm-hmm. Early in the company, because that's where, like, we talked to a lot of companies early on that just they don't have that level of a sophistication yet around the attribution and, you know, average revenue per post or, you know, something extremely detailed. And so it sounds like that's kind of, you're doing just doing the best you could with those and then moving forward and eventually getting better attribution.
Yeah, and we could, you know, induce some early learnings. A lot of times the people that engaged more with our science content, so stuff that no one else in the world could produce the exact same content because it was our proprietary science, our data. Those people were more likely to move through the funnel and raise their hand early on versus folks who landed on our site looking for, you know, top 10 employee engagement activities. They would either not eventually convert or they would just take a lot longer. So also understanding the types of content which led to conversions was important too.
Yep, cool. So then, I guess explain a little bit about how you, balance some of that. Cause I think that's an important aspect as you look into like planning, say, you know, this time of year, sort of fall, like looking into the next year, planning for the full calendar, but then also needing to kind of break up by quarter, understanding the topics and the formats and the audience to know. Like, are we too heavy on top of funnel? Are we too heavy on bottom of funnel? We're not going to be reaching enough new people. Like, I'd love to kind of hear how you thought about distributing that throughout your planning for, you know, a quarter or even the year, to make sure you had kind of a good mix of some of the top of funnel stuff that takes longer and then and lower in the funnel that will convert.
Yeah, so we have a roadmap and it looks out, you know, a year or so in advance, and that's the product roadmap. So we know exactly where we're going with our product and we kind of work backwards. And we have some things that happen every year around the same time. So we have our annual conference and we're going to create a ton of content to promote that and to show at the event and content after the event. So we're already kind of working on that now, the event's in April. And we have our annual talent optimization report that goes live in January every year. So we started working on that. Already. So we always have our eye on the roadmap. So we have kind of the stuff that we know we need to do. We know we need to be blogging. We know we need to be creating courses. We know we need to be creating content that we're going to put paid behind. And we know we're going to do our webinars. We know we have our mix pretty much figured out. But then we always try to not get lazy. We always try to stay surprising our audience and exciting them and just not being boring. So what else could we do to educate them and delight them? So we're thinking a lot lately with experiences. So, you know, we do a lot of virtual events and we do webinars. So those are experiences, but what else could we do that would be surprising, different, and unique? Not only to capture attention, not only to go after target accounts, but also to delight our best customers and let them know that we care.
Very cool. Yeah, I like what you said there because I think, you know, you mentioned earlier like building scalable processes and a team around it. If that pendulum swings too far, it feels extremely boring, extremely formulaic. Like, yes, they do a webinar once per month and they drop, you know, this guide and it's like, so I like what you said there about like making sure that it isn't boring and you're actually making the active, concerted effort to be a little more interesting or do things that are unexpected. And, yeah, that's really smart. I want to jump into the data report stuff in just a minute, but real quick. So you said you're up to a team of 8 now. So I'd love to kind of hear the progression of how you went from just you to 8 and kind of how you thought about which types of hires to prioritize and kind of how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, so writing was first and foremost because you need words for everything. Even if you have your, you know, a comms person who's crafting emails and managing all of that, even if you have demand gen people who can create ad copy, you always need someone who can edit and refine and make sure that it's on brand and it's, you know, spoken with clarity. So definitely needed more writing chops. So that was definitely the first person I knew I wanted to hire.
Yep.
Then video. Video is so important. You need somebody that can help manage the logistics of webinars. You need somebody who can create sizzle reels to help promote events. Mm-hmm. So definitely that was really important. And then from there, gosh, I'm trying to think what came next. Another writer, just because we function as an internal agency in the sense that we service the entire business. We help with product. We are creating copy that's within the product. We are creating, you know, even helping with sometimes workshop materials for our clients. And we have a partner network, so we're also creating content for partner onboarding and training and all of that. So we're not just focused on just marketing. We're focused on helping the entire business and marketing. So there's a lot going on. And from there, we grew up the team to have three branches. So graphic design is one branch on the content team. Media, which is the people who do podcasts, webinars, video, digital learning, so courses, certifications, and then editorial.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And that, like, getting to that point where you, you have to specialize in some way, whether it's by sort of content format or audience or whatever. And so that's a smart way to do it with those breakouts. I like that. And totally agree. Like, it's the writing stuff early on is so key. But I do think hearing that, like, it stood out to me that you did also hire a video person second, because I think that tends to be less common, I feel like, or sort of a luxury for a lot of marketing teams. Like, oh, if we had a video person, that would be just like such a nice to have, and it's awesome that you prioritized that as early as you did.
Yeah, I think it would be really hard to do the kind of events and experiences that we do without a really strong videographer. Not just a videographer, someone who can conceptualize and storyboard and who understands what makes a good film. Because a lot of times we think of cheesy product videos, but really marketing is so expansive. There's so many directions you can go, and maybe you want someone who has a background in film or commercials or TV that could make for more interesting video. Just like hiring a former journalist instead of someone with just a SEO blogging background that can make for more compelling content. So,
yep, awesome. Thanks for sharing that. So let's jump into the data report stuff. I think that's an area where you've sounds like you've developed a lot of expertise on kind of how to do all the work behind it, collecting the data, but then also structuring them, promoting them. So I guess to start, would love to hear a little bit about what the core data report or reports are for predictive index and how you're currently using those in your marketing sort of as a starting point would be great.
When I think of why somebody would want to do a report, it's always going to be your company goals. So one of our huge goals is category awareness and adoption, which is why we do our annual talent optimization report. And then from there, what does your audience need to learn about that would help them be successful? So for example, we have our annual CEO report where we talk about, you know, what CEOs are struggling with, what they care about. They can understand what their peers are doing. And we actually make a V2 of that and we distribute it for our consultant audience, because our consultant audience ideally would come on as PI partners. So we found out, we originally did a consultant report. What are other consultants doing? Because the CEO report always does really well. It didn't do super good. So then we tried something else. We said, well, how about what do CEOs want from consultants? That's done amazing. So we found out by testing that consultants don't care what other consultants are doing. They care what CEOs want them to be doing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of testing, trying to really have intimate knowledge of what your audience wants to learn. And then, of course, the third kind of leg of the stool is industry trends, market trends. So, for example, in summer of 2020, we were all forced to work remotely. For us, it might not have been a huge change because we're tech. We work remotely a lot anyway. But for a lot of our clients, they had never worked remotely a day in their life. So they were really, really struggling. And we really wanted to be helpful. So we wanted to put out a remote work report. But we also didn't want it to be boring like the other 500 remote work reports that companies put out in 2020. So we tried to find a way to layer on our science, which we know sets us apart. So what we did was we surveyed our user base from all different industries, and we match their behavioral reference profile to their remote work preferences, likes, dislikes, and told a story that way. And that's been one of our most successful reports. It's generated more than $500,000 in revenue.
A lot to unpack there. I'll start with, so at Sprout, we did the Sprout Social Index, similar, you know, kind of surveying our own users, others in the industry, and then sort of a point in time, especially now, I think they're much more sort of timely and relevant. It was not my team doing it, it was a different part of marketing, but it was just essentially just the one report. I think it was roughly every 6 months we did it. It sounds like that the data reports you do, a lot of different ones, like you said, you're testing different topics. Do you have like a set number that you intend to do each year, or is it sort of like you leave some room to like jump on something when it happens to be a little more opportunistic?
We try to do 4 per year. We always do the talent optimization report no matter what. And the other 3, we have our go-tos that we know perform well, but we do always leave some room for opportunities like the remote work report. Every year, to keep it fresh, if we do a report like the CEO report, every year has a different angle. And we're always trying to think about what's going to get picked up in the press too. So what is newsworthy? How can we ask CEOs questions this year that might be different than last year, in addition to, of course, comparing year over year data?
Yep. Okay, cool. And then how much do you take stats or snippets from that and pull it into other parts of your marketing? Are you kind of citing your own research in blog posts, or, you know, pulling stats into ads or anything like that? Or do you kind of keep it pretty walled off into the data reports?
Definitely do not keep it walled off. We use it a lot. Yeah, we use it in ads, and we found that the ads where we have people kind of fill in the blank and it's more of an interactive ad end up doing really well for us. So we have them guess what percentage, or guess, you know, who said this, and those tend to do really well. We use the data in our blog posts, of course, that's pretty obvious. We use the data for webinars. So for example, in August, we did our annual people management report, and we used that data for our monthly webinar. And at the end of, it was actually a co-marketing webinar. So at the end of the webinar, we asked people, you know, who would like to request a demo, raise your hand. We had like 143 people actually raise their hand to request a demo after sitting through a webinar. It was pretty, pretty awesome. And I don't know that would have happened if we did a more generic webinar. I think it really kind of showed that we had our finger on the pulse, and it kind of shows that we were a thought leader. We weren't just phoning it in.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. One of the other things that came to mind in your sort of initial explanation, do you have data science resources that are sort of doing a lot of that analysis and figuring out a lot of the data for you, or is that within your team as well?
We have amazing, brilliant PhD data scientists in-house. Awesome. And they do all of they clean the data, they actually present it in a way that the content team can just rock with it. We don't have to sit there and try to go through that raw data and figure out what it means. They really make it really easy for us. And, you know, they ensure that we're representing the data accurately. We have a thought partner. They're making sure that we're not leaning too hard into our marketing brain and being too sensational with the headlines. They're really keeping us honest. So I think it's really, really important to work with a data scientist or data analyst. It can't just be marketing alone.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. And do they help with like structuring surveys as well? Because I know even survey design and the way you ask questions, there's a right and wrong way to do it. Is that something they help with as well?
Yes, it's collaborative. So we have a meeting, we have a kickoff with myself, whoever's writing that report, and then one of the data scientists. And we really talk about what we're hoping to uncover, what would be some interesting things to find, and then we work through the questions together, and nothing ever goes out without making sure that the data scientist has signed off, that the questions are written in a way that's gonna be fair, easily understandable by everyone, not in any way biasing people, et cetera.
Yeah, okay, cool. So I guess to conclude on the data report stuff, is that, how applicable do you think that is for every bit? Like, do you think every business can do it? Or do you think there's just certain types that it works really well for? Just in terms of, like, I guess anyone listening or considering it, like, is that something you think just really any business can and should be able to do it?
Well, some businesses can barely form a coherent blog post. So I would say those businesses probably don't have the resources to do a report, because it's definitely more difficult to write a report than it is to just write, you know, a blog post. So you want to make sure that you have either the talent in-house that can do that for you, or the budget to hire somebody as a freelancer that can do that for you, because it's not going to be cheap. Same goes for, you know, graphic design. There's a whole science behind data visualization. And if you get some, like, really inexperienced designer off of Upwork or something like that, they might not properly know how to do data visualization. So you're going to want to have someone that knows how to do that, and doesn't just know how to do some basic, like, layout type stuff. And then, of course, your data scientist, that's a critical piece of the pie. So you'll want to have that in-house, or at least have the budget to outsource that. There are freelancers, there are agencies, there are, you know, big companies like Qualtrics and Dynata, SurveyMonkey, but it does take a budget to do a report. So if you do have some budget, you can definitely do an amazing report that really does paint you as an industry leader. If you have a very, very small budget, you can still do it. You just have to be very, very careful that you're not misrepresenting the data to serve your own narrative, because then you're breaking the trust people would have.
Yes, absolutely. Cool. And you just created a course covering a lot of how to do this. Is that correct?
I did. Yeah, it's an advanced content marketing course. So it's for people who are already doing good content marketing, people that understand the fundamentals. It's about 60 to 70 minutes of videos, and then it's a couple different templates you can just plug and play. I don't explain every single step. Like, I don't explain how you would write a blog post and include the data, because I would assume any content marketer would understand how to do that. It's much more about understanding the steps, the project management, keeping everyone on track. And then I just recently, this week, filmed a bonus lesson that went even deeper into my writing process, because somebody who had purchased the course said she loved it. She just wished that she could go inside my head a bit more. So I filmed another 10 minutes of how I approach every single question from a white blank page to a fully written page.
Yep. Okay. Cool. And if anyone wanted to find out more about that, where would they find that at?
It's for sale on Gumroad. Or if you go to LinkedIn, I'm the only Erin Balsa on LinkedIn. I'm super lucky I married a guy with an unusual last name. And if you go to my LinkedIn page, you'll be able to find it in my featured section.
Okay, very cool. So that's a great segue, because I wanted to touch real quick on, you know, thinking about, obviously you have a really good handle on content marketing, how to, like, pull through performance, revenue impact, a lot of that stuff, and then obviously the data reports being a part of that. Would love to shift a little bit into, you know, I've seen your expanded efforts, I would say, you know, over last year and a half, on LinkedIn, and just kind of growing your personal brand, putting out a lot of content from that standpoint. So that's obviously something we like to cover as well, is not just content generating revenue for a company, but also just the way people are using content to grow their brand, audience, influence, kind of all that stuff. So would love to just kind of understand how much of that was like, I got this fully baked plan, I'm going to go out and do it, or was it like just started doing it once in a while and liked it and picked up from there? Like, how did you get started in all of your work, I guess, on LinkedIn?
It was summer of 2020, and I was stuck at home with my husband and my two kids, who were 4 and 5 at the time, and I missed having a social life, and I turned to LinkedIn. It was really as simple as that, and I thought, hey, like, I could share some thoughts, and it kind of took off, like, pretty fast. It was pretty cool to see how responsive people were to asking questions, getting to know me, building those relationships.
Yeah.
About a month or two in, I took Justin Welch's course. It's called The LinkedIn Playbook. That really helped me kind of come up with a content matrix and think through how I wanted to structure what I was going to be talking about. So it gave me a little bit more of a plan, which was great. And then, you know, I just stuck with it. I think that's important too, is the consistency. It's been, I don't know, 15 or so months now. I post 4 to 5 times a week, every week. Even when I'm on vacation, I still post. And,
yep.
You know, the one side of it is, oh, you know, you should take a break. Everyone needs a break. It's not work to me. I love it.
Yeah.
You know, yes, it is a little bit of work. I have to think about what I want to say, and I have to interact with all the people that comment. But it's not like work. It's enjoyable. I've always liked helping and teaching, and it's nice to be able to teach the things I know to people across the world, particularly people who might not have access to the opportunities I have living in Boston, where there's a million different companies I can go to, work for, learn on the job. Not everyone has those opportunities.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. And what would you say, like, you know, one or multiple of kind of the biggest benefits? Obviously, like you're saying, social interaction is just enjoyable and connecting mm-hmm. with people and helping people. But, you know, what have you seen in ways that has sort of helped you or benefited you personally?
First, if I was looking for a new job, I could have had about 100 new jobs by now, because I get yeah. reached out to all the time for really great jobs at really great, wonderful companies that I would have like cut off my right arm for to work for in the past.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I'm really lucky to work at the Predictive Index. They've never put any guardrails on me. They think it's great. You know, it's all about better work, better world, pursue your dreams. Like, you want to build a name for yourself. That's cool. You can do that. You can do that on company time. It's benefiting us, because every time someone knows you, they also know the Predictive Index. So
totally.
It is a form of marketing every time that I'm interacting with people. So thank God for PI. I've had a lot of loyalty to the company. They've treated me really well. So that is why, you know, a lot of companies are afraid to let their employees build a brand, because they will get offers and some people will leave just for an extra $30,000, $40,000. But
right.
I love PI. They give me a lot of freedom. They treat me great. So to me, I never wanted to leave. So
yeah, yeah. Awesome.
It's been great. And on That's the other great. Side, I have a freelance business. I'm a content marketing consultant and writer, working with B2B companies, and it's definitely brought in 5 or 6 leads every single week. So it gets to the point where it's just amazing. You know, you think when you're starting your business, how am I ever going to get customers? How are people going to find out about me?
Yep.
And it's like, well, you have this huge opportunity right in front of you. And a lot of people just don't take advantage of that.
Totally. Yep. Yep. Awesome. I love that. Cool. So you've had a great experience to sort of coming into PI with experience, but as the first content marketer, building a team, building an operation, just a lot of awesome experience. So I would say, like, what could you share that you've learned, you know, from everything you've created, produced, orchestrated, that would be helpful for folks?
For folks who are looking to grow in their career?
Yeah, or even just kind of marketing leaders that are, you know, content is part of their overall go-to-market. Just kind of any advice on that front.
Sure. I think that it's important to set clear expectations for people, to show them what good looks like, what great looks like, to give really clear feedback, and not to be afraid to give difficult and constructive feedback. I think it's important to set an expectation expectation that we're all going to have healthy conflict, and that's okay. So that, you know, for example, just today, a manager on the marketing team floated an idea past me for a campaign that we're launching in November and said, oh, I would love to frame it like this. And instantly I said, well, I disagree, because what about this and that? And, you know, and we're able to have that. And he's able to say, wow, you're right. I didn't think of it that way, because our leaders have built such a strong foundation that's accepted and welcomed and okay. It's okay to disagree. It's okay to, you know, push back. You don't have to be a yes person. And a lot of, especially people who are earlier on in their career, they're afraid to push back. They're afraid to manage up. They'll just say yes, even if it might not be the right thing to do. And I think that we need to be open to listening to those voices, unique perspectives, and giving people the permission to push back and question things. And as a leader, leaving your ego at the door and knowing that, you know, just because it's your way, it might not be the best way.
Yep. Yep. Awesome. I love it. That's great. Cool. So I have one more question for you before I ask it. If you've enjoyed this episode, please visit 10speed.io/podcast for the show notes. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast and check out Erin's course on Gumroad or find it through her profile, Erin Balsa, on LinkedIn. So with that, we'll wrap up here. Just any final advice or encouragement you would give to marketers who want to invest in content to grow their company?
Yeah, advice that I have is don't be boring. You have to have something special to stand out these days. You don't have to be extreme. You don't have to be bold or edgy if that's not your brand. It doesn't work for everyone. But if you are a more of a mentor type brand, you have to stand out in some other way. You can't just be the typical boring advice that floats out there. It has to be unique. You have to have a point of view. You have to have some sort of interesting point of view on the market. And a lot of companies don't have that. And it's really hard to do. So it makes a lot of sense why they don't have that. So I would say, if you feel like if someone was going to stop you in an elevator today and say, hey, what's your company point of view? And you couldn't confidently give them a 30 or 60 second elevator pitch, I would just start there, because the tighter your POV can be, the tighter your content and your copy can be when everyone has that as kind of their guiding foundation.
Yep. Okay. Love it. That's awesome. Cool. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. Lots of great information. I appreciate everything you've shared.
Sure. My mother watched my last podcast from last week, and she told me that I talk with my hands too much. So if anyone's watching this, I didn't want to say at the beginning and bias you, but please let me know. DM me on LinkedIn if I talked with my hands and it drove you nuts, or if it was totally fine. I can prove my mother wrong. I would love to know.
Perfect. Cool. All right. Thanks, Erin.
All right. Thank you.